What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
So we woke up this morning and it was so cold the lake froze over in the middle of the night, and it's a thing of beauty to see.
It's also the sign that any day now the cops will be out here getting someone out of the lake.
Right,
because
it happens every year.
You cannot trust a frozen lake in Maine.
Yeah, yet all of our neighbors have decided that they like to snowmobile on the lake. And that's great.
As soon as it freezes.
Yeah, but wait until the ice is completely frozen. George, our neighbor across the road, lost his Ski-Doo right into the lake. What was it?
2 years ago?
Two, 3 years ago.
Yep.
And it's still there.
Oh, yeah. No, there. It is a Ski-Doo graveyard.
It really is.
For sure.
Archaeologists, generations from now, will be diving our lake.
Why did people put the... It must have been some sort of religious thing.
Religious ritual. Yeah. Yeah. It is, of course, days away from Christmas. Mm. And I have an appropriate story.
You have a holiday-themed story?
Yes.
I'm very excited about this.
It has to do with the skeletal remains of Santa Claus.
Okay. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Okay. All right. Well, let me clarify. Santa Claus, of course, is based on St. Nicholas.
Yeah.
A real person.
Sure.
St. Nicholas was a bishop who lived and died in what is now Turkey in the first half of the 4th century. He was born very wealthy. He was a very generous man, and he enjoyed giving people gifts.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
There's a few stories about that. There was one story where there was a widow who lived with her children in a house, like a poor house at the time, and he went by in the middle of the night and left three little bags of gold coins.
Aww.
On the windowsill for them.
And then the next day, Elf's dad came by and he took their books away and she was all, but the children love the books.
Another story in the legend is that there was a house of ill repute
in the
area. And he would go by and throw gold coins in the window to support the prostitution industry, I guess, at the time.
I mean, there are other ways to support it.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was just paying his bills.
Maybe.
Could be. We don't know.
Yeah.
But his legend went far beyond his generosity.
Getting his candy cane wet, you know what I mean?
There was a horrible situation in the city where he lived at the time. A butcher had killed three children and carved them up and stored their remains in a vat of brine. And legend has it that he raised the children from the dead.
Oh.
Now, I believe the whole gold coin in the hooker's window.
Right.
I get that.
Yeah.
But the children being raised from lumps of flesh that have been pickled, a little hard for me to believe. Mm. Yet, that's part of the legend.
Okay. I did not know that. That's really interesting.
His legend spread far and wide, mostly because of semen.
Again, we're back to the house of ill repute.
No, sailors. That's what I meant by that.
Oh.
They believed that St. Nicholas could keep them safe on lengthy sea voyages. They'd often cry out his name in rough seas. A storm, she's a brewing. Jolly old St. Nick, save me. Like that. That's what they would do.
Is that what it would sound like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was a little bit different, but but the legend was if they called out the name of St. Nicholas, the rough seas would disappear and they would turn smooth as glass. So it was sailors who started spreading the word of St. Nicholas around.
Sailors have spread a lot of stuff. Just saying, please continue.
Yep. They were the ones responsible for spreading the word of the cult of St. Nicholas around the world. Okay. People all over the world knew about St. Nicholas. This was really, like 1600 years ago.
Right. Patron saint of sailors and hookers.
Yep, something like that. Within a very short time, less than 100 years, the bishop was worshipped as a saint, mostly because of sailors. Ports were named after St. Nicholas. Islands, inlets, probably thousands of babies were named after St. Nick. Because of this, he became one of the best-loved saints of all Christendom. So how he became Santa Claus is a whole different thing because, there's a bit of a leap there from St. Nicholas,
right?
An historical figure, to Santa Claus, who is, a mythical icon. I mean, that's what some people say.
Right.
Historians believe probably it's owed to the December 6th Feast of St. Nicholas. That's what kind of placed St. Nicholas around what is now the Christmas or holiday season. St. Nicholas is a feast, the Feast of St. Nicholas.
Bet a lot of those ladies thought he was.
Now, we all think of Santa Claus as, a jolly old man wearing a big red suit. Where did the red suit come from? Probably from St. Nicholas's red bishop robes.
Oh, okay.
They interpreted that, changed it, and it became a red suit with fur trim, apple bottom jeans. Now, what about the name Santa Claus? This is the part that I found.
Go ahead. I require artwork that shows St. Nick in apple-bottom jeans.
And boots maybe, with the fur?
Yeah, maybe red jeans. Red denim is a thing. And just a fat booty, popping up out of those jeans a little bit, like super low rise, little poop, yeah. So you get a little poop, poop out of the top.
All right, artist freaks, you've been given your assignment from Kat. Draw us a picture of Santa wearing apple-bottom jeans and boots with the fur. Anyway, Santa Claus. Where did we get the name Santa Claus? This is really quite interesting. It's derived from how the Dutch immigrants of New Amsterdam pronounced his name. Not St. Nicholas, but Sinterklaas.
Oh.
Sinterklaas. St. Nicholas, Sinterklaas.
Sinterklaas
Nicholas. That's how it sounded to them. So they would call him Sinterklaas. So it became Santa Claus. The legend of St. Nicholas is a powerful legend, as so was his corpse, by the way.
Oh?
Let's talk about the corpse of St. Nick.
Yes, please.
Now, we all know the story about the bodies of saints and martyrs in Christian history. Since its beginning, they've been very important to the religion. The earliest churches were built on the tombs of saints.
Right.
And pieces of their corpses, referred to as religious relics, were believed to hold a certain holy power, and still do. It was believed that using these religious relics would help you connect and possibly communicate with higher powers through them. Kind of like a bone cell phone or something.
Like holding a shell up to your ear. Yeah,
kind of, I guess.
And yeah. Except it's like femur.
Yeah. They believe that the holy relics would help manifest the holy forces on earth. They could heal you, they could protect you, and, of course, perform miracles. Sometimes the miracles of saints concerned their own bodies. We've heard stories about saints whose corpses did not corrupt.
Exactly.
That they refused to decay. Some dripped blood decades, even centuries after death, and some would ooze some kind of inexplicable substance.
That's just called decomp. But
it's different because it smelled like roses. This is what happened with jolly old Saint Nick.
Oh.
Santa's skeletal remains. Not too long after his death, a liquid started secreting from the bones. It was said that it smelled like roses and had the power to heal.
See, I would have thought like winter mint or something like that.
Right. This was taken as a sign.
Is this gingerbread?
That Nicholas in his corpse was holy, and thousands of people began flocking to his tomb in the port city of Myra in Turkey.
See, just because something smells good doesn't mean that it's holy. Like, gangrene smells like almonds, guys. That doesn't mean that...
You want to rub it on your wounds.
Right.
Word quickly spread. And two other ports were very jealous of Myra. They were getting all the attention because of St. Nicholas's body. So what they did was there became this great competition for holy relics at this time. In fact, there was even an underground black market relics trade.
Oh, geez. Of course there was.
Yeah. Merchants, even monks, would sneak into the crypts of churches and steal them some holy bones. Surprisingly, this was not considered a sin.
No?
No, because they believe, like King Arthur's sword in the stone, relics could only be removed by the right person. So if they were able to steal the relics, they were meant to steal the relics.
That is a wonderful way to get away with crimes, to be like, no, because if the universe didn't want me to have stolen it, it wouldn't have let me.
So this is what happened.
I'm supposed to have your riding lawnmower.
This is what happened to jolly old Saint Nick. A group of merchants and sailors from Bari raided the city and ultimately the tomb. Apparently they wanted to compete with the Venetians who had just finished stealing the bones of Saint Mark.
The patron saint of blinds?
Sure. They smuggled his bones. This is what they did with Saint Mark. They smuggled his bones out in a basket of pork from Alexandria in the year 827. The Barians had heard that Myra had fallen to the Turks, and that left St. Nicholas's tomb unguarded. So they had heard that Myra had fallen to the Turks, and that had left St. Nicholas's tomb unguarded, the tomb of jolly old St. Nick. So they thought that they needed a saint for themselves. Of course, you know, any reputable port has its own saint.
Sure.
And a Barian clerk, in an account shortly after the theft, wrote that three ships from Bari sailed into the harbor in the spring of 1087. There were 47 Barians, and they were all well-armed. They got off the ship and immediately tromped to the Church of St. Nicholas, where they politely asked to see the tomb. The monks were a little suspicious and wanted to know what they were up to.
Is this some sort of weird tour? Or?
Yeah, it's the middle of the night. But rather than explain, the Barians just tied the monks up and smashed their way into the sarcophagus.
Oh.
There they found the skeletal remains of Santa Claus submerged in that ooze. Report said that a heavenly perfume wafted up from the bones. It was described in one account as, quote, licking at the venerable priests as if in insatiable embrace. And so the bones of St. Nick quickly made their way to Bari. Now, the stealing of St. Nick's bones made the men who stole them and the thieves that were involved local heroes. They became famous in the area for stealing the bones of St. Nick. Mm. And for centuries after they died, their descendants would receive a percentage of all offerings that were given on the feast's day. For hundreds of years, their descendants got money because they stole the bones of St. Nicholas.
Oh, okay.
They even built a new basilica to hold the remains. And throughout the Middle Ages, thousands of pilgrims would visit. They even have an elaborate festival, a Feast of Translation, which celebrates the day that the stolen bones of St. Nicholas arrived in Bari. And one of the highlights of the festival, this is weird, is the rector will lean into St. Nicholas's sarcophagus and draw off some of the liquid that's in there in the tomb.
Because it's Santa juice.
The Santa juice. He puts it in a crystal vial and then mixes it with holy water and pours it into decorated bottles that are sold in Bari's gift shops.
Okay.
It's thought to be a curative drink.
Oh, no, they don't drink it.
They drink it.
Oh, no.
Drinking Santa juice.
Stop that. Mm.
So Bari's been well known as the place for St. Nicholas's bones. But the Venetians also claim that they have the bones of St. Nick. They say their own sailors visited Myra during the first crusade and stole Nicholas's remains, and they've been in Venice ever since that time. So for centuries,
someone's got fake bones.
That's what we need to determine. For centuries, both Bari and Venice have claimed to have the bones of St. Nicholas. In 1953, officials allowed a university professor to examine for the first time the remains of the tomb in Bari. It had been opened for the first time in 800 years. They hadn't opened the tomb. The examination found the bones wet, fragile, fragmented, with many of them missing.
That sounds like me after 2020. Just kind of like, oh, I'm fragmented.
He concluded that they belonged to a man who died in his 70s. But other than that, they could say little more. 40 years later, scientists studied the bones in Venice. And they found out that the bones in Venice and the bones in Bari came from the same skeleton. So their thought is the relics in Venice and the ones in Bari had come from the same skeleton. They theorized that the sailors from Venice had stolen what was left in Myra after the Barians had done their initial raiding of the tomb. Apparently, they didn't get all of Santa's bones out. So for the original site in Myra, all that is left is an empty tomb. And they kind of want their bones back, please and thank you.
Sure.
Back in 2009, Turkish government officials said it was considering a formal request for the return of St. Nicholas's remains. The bones have very little religious significance in Turkey, since 99% of the population is Muslim. But there's still a sense that stealing St. Nick's bones was a cultural violation.
Sure.
Plus, of course, it would make a really great tourist attraction. I guess a lot of people go to the original St. Nicholas's tomb in Turkey and are horribly disappointed when they find out that the tomb is empty.
But I'm sorry, are you telling me that TripAdvisor hasn't been updated since the Barians came and stole his bones?
Well, it takes a while. Local officials tried to compensate by this. This is not a joke. They decided that they would try to, since they didn't have the bones of St. Nick anymore, and they didn't want the tourists to be disappointed, they put a giant plastic lit Santa Claus outside the tomb.
Nice.
But I guess people weren't buying that. So Santa remains scattered over the Mediterranean area, pretty much. Now, Santa Claus, of course, is an international cultural icon these days. But the myth is rooted in the bones of a man who died 16 centuries ago. And his remains are now scattered across Europe and the Middle East.
Wow.
Merry Christmas.
That is crazy interesting.
Weird, huh? I love the Sinterklaas. Sinterklaas, that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that part the best.
And now, that thing in the middle. It's not uncommon these days for children to write letters to Santa this time of year. But during the 1800s at Christmas time, Santa wrote to the children instead of the other way around. Santa told kids what naughty things they needed to stop doing to guarantee they'd receive presents. Santa even gave specific examples, like, hey, you broke a vase, you stole a biscuit, you punched a street urchin in the face. This was to prove that Santa was watching at all times. Merry creepy Christmas.
The Box of Oddities. At a frequency so high, only your dog can understand. Support for The Box of Oddities is provided in part by listeners like you on Patreon. You can support us too. Go to patreon.com/boxofoddities. Thank you. The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
Sydney sent us an email to curator@theboxofoddities.com. Finally, I can say hi to Kat and Jethro. I just finished all 284 episodes in the Box of Oddities catalog, and I felt that I wasn't worthy enough to talk to you before I did so. You silly goose.
No.
I've been trying to remember all the Box of Oddity effects that I've experienced and fun ideas for you guys to talk about. So I'm going to share some with you now.
Yes, please.
I'll share the first one. It's kind of a lengthy email, and we appreciate it. Thank you, Sydney. Sydney said, I remember listening to an episode. I couldn't tell you the number. I'm lazy. I believe Kat was talking about the significance of the number 1111, or the numbers 1111. I got out of the shower and the episode was ending. I looked at my phone to move on to the next episode, and it was, of course,
1111.
1111. Thanks, Sydney, for sharing. We appreciate hearing from you guys. We
really
do.
Absolutely. Always.
What you got for me?
All right. I was in the pool. Okay, I can't do a George Costanza voice. I was, sorry.
What? What? That wasn't even close to George Costanza.
I was in the pool. That's,
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
the,
no?
The shrinkage.
Yeah. So let's talk about shrinkage a little bit. We know that cold temperatures, obviously, can cause a retraction of certain things. And according to Men's Health, you can expect your penis to shrivel by about 50% in length and 20 to 30% in girth when you're exposed to any air temperature below 60 degrees.
Which is why I have been reluctant to leave the house this morning.
Now, blood vessels will constrict. That limits blood flow to your wiener. And, of course, you know, that's part of the whole reserving energy thing. Of course, less blood flow goes to your all of your extremities, if you will, and goes to your core, your organs, and not your organ.
Yeah. For some reason, the universe has decided that our winkies aren't mandatory.
Well,
which is ridiculous.
I don't know. I also think it's really interesting that your balls like are outside of your body, and it's just like, woof, it's too hot in there.
Yeah, well,
we gotta get out.
That's it. That's why they say if you wear underwear that's too tight in your ball sack gets too hot, it affects your sperm count.
Yeah.
Although I've never counted my sperm.
Oh, that's good.
Who's got that kind of time?
That's important. Now, there is a group of people, or there have been many people, that struggle with the anxiety of their penis shrinking or even vanishing inside their body forever.
What?
It's called Koru, and it is mostly a cultural bound syndrome. It's a delusional disorder in which an individual has an overpowering belief that their sex organs are retracting and will disappear.
Will never come back.
That's right.
Wow.
It's found mainly among the Chinese and other Asian societies near China, and the condition is most prevalent in southern China, where repeated epidemics of people claiming that their weens and their labia are disappearing.
Wow.
The word is borrowed from Malay, which means the head of a turtle, referring to how it looks when, you know, the turtle retracts their head into the shell. It was first mentioned in the ancient Chinese text, The Yellow Emperor's Classic of Internal Medicine, dating to 300 BC.
Internal, for sure.
Now, among females, the cardinal symptom is nipple retraction into the breast. Mm-hmm. Generally, into the breast as a whole, and anxiety can also revolve around, as I said, the labia, with an overwhelming fear that your nipple and or your labia are being absorbed back into your body.
See, that's interesting, because with guys, when it's cold, you know, it retracts into the body. The penis retracts into the body, or shrinks up and shrivels, whatever. With women, when it's cold, their nipples get bigger. Why is that?
I don't know. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, but I wanted to talk about nipples.
Okay. Well, I don't think that it's... I think that has to do with stimulation, and it could be... I don't know. I'm very uncomfortable talking about that right now.
Okay, fine.
In 1967...
Nipple.
...was one of the best documented epidemics of Koru. Hundreds of people rushed to hospitals, terrified that if they loosened their grip on their members, that they would disappear and they would die.
Wow.
In one case, a 16-year-old rushed into the hospital's outdoor clinic with his parents close behind him. The boy looked frightened and pale, as one report described it. He was pulling hard on his penis to prevent the organ from disappearing into his abdomen. Doctors reassured him and the family that his penis was not disappearing. They gave him basically a tranquilizer, and after that, he was better.
Hmm. So it's some kind of mass hysteria thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, this boy had heard rumors that tainted pork that came from inoculated pigs that had been inoculated against swine fever could cause genitals to shrink and or disappear.
Was this on the QAnon website?
Well, what had happened was a lot of people had heard this report, and more people followed to the emergency room. Oh. Hospitals were flooded with patients. Pork sales plummeted. And the officials in that region had to announce that the swine fever and the vaccine were harmless to humans, but it didn't matter. For 7 days, Singapore Medical Association and the Ministry of Health had to deal with these influxes. Is that, can you pluralize it? This influx of patients claiming that their genitals were disappearing. And they had to appear on television and radio to announce that it was purely psychological. Like your peeners are not disappearing. And imagine, even if they did, you're not going to die.
Imagine being the newscaster who received that bulletin.
Yeah. This just in, your wiener is not going away.
Film at 11.
After the officials came on television repeatedly and said, this is just in your head, it's not actually happening, there have been no actual reports of this phenomena that, that you're all picturing happening, people started to like chill out. And it's kind of like, because it just happened in their brain, because they just imagined this illness, they could kind of like calm themselves out of the disorder.
Wow.
There is, however, a danger connected with Koro, and it's because...
Is it pulling on your penis too hard?
Yes, it's because you have this idea that it's disappearing. People would try to prevent it from shrinking further by pulling on it, sometimes tying strings around it, or securing it with a clamping device.
Oh, no. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't clamp your penis with a device unless it's, you know, designed for that.
And that's where the injuries came from. And in some cases, people had worked so hard to prevent their genitals from disappearing that they had permanently damaged their genitals.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
In some cases, people had convinced their family, or in even rarer cases, their neighbors, that they needed to help them. And so they had family members holding on to their genitals.
Like a tug of war.
Something like that, yes.
A tug of war that nobody wins.
Nobody wins. No. In even rarer cases, others might believe that someone else has Koro and can attempt to rescue their organs, which is really upsetting when you don't have consent.
Yeah, uninvited organ rescue is not a good idea.
This is according to the National Library of Medicine. So it's believed that in certain cultures, the general state of shrinkage, which is completely normal, that can lead to eventual impotence and sterility and eventually death. So traditional Chinese medicine treats the shrinkage with a few different types of, you know, quote unquote medicines. And we've talked about that before.
I don't know. It sounds like the tranquilizers worked.
Right. And for the most part, Koro is held to be a Chinese cultural bound condition because that is the region in which it's the most perpetuated that shrinkage can lead to these things slash death. However, the phenomenon is also known among other ethnic and religious groups in Asia and in Africa, typically in cultures which reproductive ability is like a huge part of what a young person's worth is, like the connection between their virility and their worth. And that's why, in some cases, the epidemic causes such widespread panic, because you're so entrenched with the idea that what you can do with your bits is what your value as a human is.
That's not specific to just that area, though. I mean, you know, I think to one degree or another, all guys feel like that.
Oh, well, I guess to a certain extent, sure. The procreative ability and even your life is triggered by rumors of your genital disappearance. So if, like I said, in China, the idea that your wiener might go away, it's triggered by what's called like female fox spirits. Female fox spirits might steal your genitals and and then you'll die.
What do they do with it after they just put them in like a trunk somewhere? They've got a trunk full of stolen members.
I've got your dick.
In Singapore and Thailand, the cause of this mass wiener disappearance is by mass poisoning. Mm. And in Africa, it's sorcery that causes the loss of your bits.
Wow.
So it is cultural in that what is causing this imagined genital disappearance is, you know, and why it's so important to the people that their genitals be present and accounted for, I guess.
So it kind of feeds on itself.
It does.
Which is a horrible, horrible picture in my mind now.
Wow. It's like that snake eating itself, except with a wiener.
Yeah, the infinity sign.
Yeah.
But a penile one.
So, yeah, it's not unheard of in Europe or you know, Western cultures, but it is much less common because we don't link our worth and our value as much with our ability to procreate. And therefore, the anxiety doesn't, you know, appear.
Doesn't have that effect.
Right.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so that is KORU, also known as genital retraction syndrome.
Wow, fascinating.
Mm.
Boy, the human brain, man.
It can do really terrible things to you.
It can do really terrible things to you.
Yeah, as we've said before, the brain is amazing and terrifying and sometimes lies to you.
Yep, a liar, a big, big liar. We actually got another email. Let me share this with you.
I'm so sorry. I'm so funny.
It's okay, honey. Derek sent us an email, said, "Hey guys, I'm an over-the-road trucker and found your podcast a few weeks ago, and I've been binging ever since. I have struggled with mental illness for most of my life and have just in the last few years started to get stabilized somewhat. I just finished listening to episode 102, The Canyon of Garbage Thoughts. I have never heard anyone else describe their brain and its stupid thoughts that way before, other than myself. I don't think I could ever explain how much that means to me. Thanks for your show, and thanks for your being wonderful selves and keep flying that freak flag." Yeah, as we've said all along, you and I have struggled with anxiety and depression to a certain degree. And what really helped us was just, first of all, medication. That helps. but secondly, really starting to shut your brain down when it starts lying to you.
Yeah.
And the more you do that, it's like exercising a muscle, the easier it becomes. It's not easy at first, but for
well, it's
me,
not easy ever.
No, but it gets easier.
And it can.
Yes, it can. It has, for me, I started by just visualizing a big light switch. And whenever my mind or brain would start to tell me something about how horrible a person I was, I would just say, "Not helpful," and flip the switch in my mind. And of course, immediately I'd start thinking about that again. But over time, I was able to shut that off more and more. Not always.
That's amazing. And like we've talked about before, I was in my 30s before I realized that I had anxiety. I just always thought I was bad at being a person, which is just like,
yeah.
I had firsthand experience in helping people who were dealing with the same feelings that I was feeling. But for some reason, because they were inside of me, it just meant that I was deficient.
Right.
And
yes.
Somehow I had convinced myself that that just meant that I wasn't good at dealing with stuff. Mm. But for everyone else, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. Like, oh my gosh, well, you must have a friggin' chemical imbalance, which doesn't allow you to think right, you know? And it, for some reason, for me, it was different. And I was just bad.
Your brain was lying to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a book that I read not long ago about, basically, about how your thoughts aren't who you are. Mm. And that, for me, was a whole revelation. Like, I always attributed my thoughts to my failures and my weaknesses.
Sure. You know, really, it's important to remember, especially during the holidays when depression and anxiety is more likely to attack one, that you're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, everybody feels these feelings. Everybody's brain lies to them. Some people are better at dealing with it than others. Some people have learned to deal with it better than others. Some people just hide it better than others.
Right.
But we all, every one of us, our brain lies to us about how we're deficient somehow.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Hey, and speaking of that, thanks for all the mail we got this week. Holy crap.
Whoa.
I mean, I had to make 2 trips to the truck. I mean, tons of cards and packages. You guys are just the sweetest. We love you so much.
So much. Thank you so, so much. I am overwhelmed.
We're going to wrap it up there. Look forward to seeing you next time. Please remember that next week there will be no Thursday show because it is Christmas Eve. We're taking that day off. But it doesn't mean we don't love you.
That's right.
Don't believe your brain.
That's a great example. No.
We'll see you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak. And don't believe your brain.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you, to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is 2 things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so 3 things is all we ask. 3 things and 3 things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.